County Administrator's report, Mr. Nicholas.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, and members of the board. Just a few quick things to cover since it's just a work session, but I want to show you a draft agenda for next week's meeting. Because the budget season through this term has got multiple kinds of meetings, tonight's just playing a work session, but it follows a larger work format, even though we have a public comment session. But next week is an actual regular board meeting along with the work session. So I would propose the agenda looks like this for next week. Where you have the standard items up front, if there's any action items that have to be done, you can put them out of the way. There probably won't be any presentations because the agenda will be full with the work session things. But then, any consent agenda items, there won't be any accounts payable or there may be any business from you. But then I would go down from there. Once you finish the large part of the agenda with the initial public comments, and then the large part of the agenda, then you go into the work sessions on both schools with the school board. If you choose, we'll have the table set up again like last year if you want, so that you can be in a group. They will just come up when we get to that work session portion. Once that's done, we'll move into CIP, and you may want the school board to stay there because there's a significant number of CIP items on the school too, but however you want to do at that point. So those will be work sessions at the end. And then that second public comment session that normally goes with the regular meeting, I just moved it to after that since there's a significant amount of discussion. You may want to save that until the end of the meeting so that people can comment after the work session. Or if you choose not to, I can just move it back up. So I would recommend just one of those.
Any questions or more? Thank you, Mr. Pickles. Go ahead and move into the presentations from Starbucks.
The first meeting in March and the 6th, you've got three items all in one shot. You've got the regular meeting with the board of supervisors. And following that, the constitutional officers make their presentation and the superintendent presents their budget. All in one shot. The next Wednesday you have after that, you have a public hearing on the budget adoption. And then the 20th, you're setting your rate. So
No. Public hearing and budget adoption is the school board. That's their meeting.
Yeah. Okay. So it would seem that sometime between the 6th, is the 6th and the, well...
Well, we've got every week in March.
See, this is something that's somewhat bothered me, at least in years past. The Board of Supervisors regular meeting on the 20th, the schools will effectively present their budget, and then we immediately have to go ahead and set a tax rate. That really doesn't give us any time to really consider the budget writ large.
I agree. I think schools are way too late.
Yeah.
They should be presenting yesterday.
But do they have the figures?
They have as good of figures as any other school system in Central Virginia.
Now,
other systems in Central Virginia have already presented budgets.
Yeah, it's across every school.
We'll be targeted all the time.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the reasons that it was left until late, so that they would have more definitive figures, and you wouldn't have to jump around. You can do it in January, but you're shooting in the dark.
But your revenue figures don't finish, your solid revenue figures don't finish until September. And there's nothing we can do about that. For the school systems, I know that would push them earlier, but they've already got draft budgets. And if it were back up a little bit, it would give you more time for discussion.
Sure. I mean hypothetically...
Change the plot.
Right. I mean, hypothetically, on the 6th, the superintendent presents her budget. On the 13th, we very well could... you can work that like what we did, say, after say last year.
Yeah.
And you could actually have the conversation then that would at least take care of the county side of it. You'll have rough numbers for the schools at that point. And then it'll be somewhat formalized to the 20th, so it'll give you the opportunity to...
They have to have their published hearing.
Well, yeah. Depending on how sequestration actually works.
Well, they talk about so much. Why don't teachers do the same races and make demands? Oh, we're just standing on basis.
I don't know. It's too late.
It sounds like we should probably meet on the 13th.
13th of March.
Yeah. For a work session. Right. But that will at least give us, between the state numbers and the school numbers, we'll have at least some ballparks.
I agree. That's a good idea.
Okay, so what you've got in March, you've got a regular meeting. And then that night, because it's a separate meeting, that night you have constitutional law. The 6th is not our meeting, that's theirs, that's the school board meeting.
Right.
The 13th is not ours, that's the school board meeting. So we could have a meeting on the 13th, for instance, because there's nothing in our schedule. We could have a meeting on the 13th just to do regular budget numbers. We can set that up, that's why there's slots still available on here. The 20th is a regular meeting, that's when the school actually comes and formally presents. But if you want to get other miscellaneous things out of the way before that, we can set up a 13th of regular budget work session, kind of a broad base like last year.
So, 14th, 7 o'clock, perhaps the Morris Room, perhaps the here.
We do it in the Morris Room or here. I have to check the planning schedule too, because there's a lot of planning meetings on the same time, but we're going to do it doesn't matter if it's
7
or 4.
Yes.
And then on the 27th,
yes.
We have a work session as needed in here.
Right, and that one's not a regular board meeting day, it's just a placeholder for a budget work session.
I think that's one of those days we can do it at 2 p.m. in the Morris Room.
Yes, sir.
No?
Yes, sir. It's just because you retired to be here.
So you're not a non-profit.
Non-profit on the 27th of February. Parks and Rec,
be able to get that information out. This is what I proposed, I guess it's 2 or 3 months ago now. We did the initial one with all the agencies and groups of support, partially our network, who functions with the Pleasant Grove. And we want to be able to do these three community ones. There was just acknowledgement of that last time. I'm just really giving you a heads up, unless you don't want these done. And secondly, we will certainly notify you all so that anyone wants to, anybody who wants to show up to the meeting, we bring that supervisor there when you're not here. And one more thing.
When are you going to start advertising this app today?
As soon as you say yes.
Tomorrow morning.
So the flyers are already in the back of the room. It could be more action for you. The Parks and Rec director is a pretty sharp guy.
But you're, if you've got one scheduled March 11th, you've got a marshal. Suggested maybe better to library, or space.
It's only possible. We just tried to go to the center of the county and get it set up. We could look at the library and say, I think we did, we wanted the library already. Okay, we can move on to the library. We'll ask that librarian if she'll do this room on the way. Okay.
Change from the Morse to the library then.
Exactly. We'll check and see. So you print all those flyers.
Are you already printing up 3,000?
We have just a smaller staff to deal with a lot of people. We have discussion of them, we mess with the library, but it's a good suggestion. And one more thing. This is actually really, really, really good. The Lake Montchell Park, I think the board's already seen this email, but I want to summarize it a little bit, and then hopefully we can get this to the newspaper and to our citizens, because it's really a big deal for Food Down County. Scott Harper, who's the chief of the Lake Montchell Fire Department, provides information about the fire rating history for the Lake Montchell Fire Department. And as a real fire department, with not a lot of city-type resources very close at hand, their scale, their rating scale, is usually not very high. And we were at one time a 9 on the 1 to 10 scale, just because you don't have a lot of hydrants close and you don't have a lot of fire stations right in neighborhoods and things. But 1 is the highest rating. They worked really hard on changing things over the years. In the late 1990s, we went to an 8/9. Then in 2004, up to a 6/9. Now the Lake Montchell Fire Department is awarded an 5/8B. Now, why is that important? Because that means a very likely reduction in personal property taxes, personal property insurance costs for residents who are served by the Lake Montchell Fire Department. And the last time the rates went down from rate 9 to 6/9, the ratings, the company's estimated it'd be $150 to $300 a year decreasing in property insurance for homeowners that are affected. And these are the different ratings that are there. And so we have a significant new rating that probably is going to decrease insurance costs for those that are served by the Lake Montchell Fire Department. And if you compare that to other fire departments in the nation, that fire department now is in the top 31% nationally, the top 24% in the state of Virginia. And these are the numbers that would have that class nationally. And here, out of, I can't remember the number, we said how many fire departments, but thousands and thousands and thousands. And we're in the couple of tiers of those now. And so they've worked really hard on getting that done. The leaders and the volunteers and the support staff at the Montchell Fire Department, who deserve a lot of kudos for that. And it benefits citizens of Food Down County. It's a great thing. And so I really appreciate them joining. We're going to try to get this in the paper and get the news out to folks, because it's a very good news story.
How far out does that cover the fire department there? In other words, like 10 miles, 15 miles, 20 miles?
I don't believe so. Chief Brett can answer where the range is.
Yeah.
The first number, the 5, is just the Lake Monticello proper, the hydrant area, and the 8B is the area outside of that, that first new area. I'll also add, if you don't mind, right now, Power Mile first new.
I'd like to add that Palma is a 9, the Kent Store area is a 9, and the Fort Kenyon area is a 7.9. And we have ISO coming into our area probably April or so this spring. And hopefully we can get ours down to a 8B. Scottsville? The Scottsville area, like in the area that you live, the Antioch area is a 9. Reason being, no water. That's one of the big reasons. Since the last ISO in Fluvanna County, we have upgraded our apparatus, which gives you additional points. We've upgraded the water system at FUSD, which is was a big problem back in the last ISO. So we should be getting additional points where we shouldn't have any problem getting down to an 8B to go along with this.
Good. So now, unless there's no more questions, the county administrator.
Any questions for the county administrator?
Absolutely.
Hearing none.
Well, now you're going to have all those extra ones. I added these on because we have some representatives here from some of those agencies, even though there are only two presentations planned.
Okay.
And I can rank the social services director's not here, but there is a board member or two. And I've got the presentation we can show you to preview it, and then you can ask questions about others. But I can drill down to any of their budgets for these areas.
Certainly. All right. Then we'll go ahead and move on to the registrar and electoral board to space.
Good evening. I'm going to give you a brief update on the voting process and the equipment and the personnel needs for the registrar's office. Okay. And so first, in order to accomplish that, we're going to take a look at our past election preparations. Now, for as long as I can remember voting in Fluvanna before 2006, we used the Shoup lever machines. The vendor technician programmed and sealed our, we had actually 21 because I found some documentation today, but we had 21 machines, and he was accompanied by the electoral board when he did that. The machines were stored in the Parks and Recreation Center and the Public Works workshop, and they were also housed at the Columbia and Cunningham precincts and at the firehouse at Lake Monticello. They remained there until Monday morning prior to the election, when they were delivered by the various polling sites, delivered to the various polling sites by the Public Works crew and the electoral board. Now we'll look at the current process of equipment. Today, we have 34 DREs, which are direct voting electronic machines. They are programmed by a vendor technician, but we are more involved in the programming of those machines. The process includes a documented logic and accuracy test on each machine. Afterwards, each machine is sealed and documentation is recorded and filed. The DREs are returned to the secure room and remain there until 4 a.m. on election day morning, where the electoral board members meet and distribute them to the sheriff's departments and the helpers. And they deliver them to the chiefs at the precincts around 4:30 a.m. and 5 o'clock a.m. All right. Legislation was passed banning the purchase of DREs when our machines in 2007. And when our machines cease to work, we will not be able to purchase any other DRE equipment. Last fall, we acquired 3 digital scanners, partly because we did not have equipment that would read the presidential ballot. So there was a federal subsidy that was available to us due to the redistricting. So we took advantage of that. So we purchased 3. And the cost of those 3 units is $19,200. But we will receive a reimbursement of $15,000. And the total cost will only be $4,200. So now the proposed process, proposed voting process and equipment. The electoral board is recommending that we give close consideration to converting polling sites to scanners and paper ballots, phasing them in over a 3-year course by purchasing 3 scanners per year starting this year. Now, the reason why is because legislation bans the purchase of new DREs. Our equipment is nearing its lifespan. 30% of our equipment malfunctioned in some manner during the presidential election. There is an increase in voting population, and legislation is being considered now to change the number of machines you'd have to have in a polling place from 750 to 500. And if we go that route, or if the state passes that legislation, then we won't have enough equipment. There is a definite push to go to paper ballots now. Don Palmer, who is the Secretary of the State Board, recommends that we begin a strategic plan of transitioning to digital optical scan voting equipment. If we go with the equipment that we got in the fall, it will be about $6,800, give or take. And if there's any subsidy available, we want to take advantage of that. So that's a ballpark figure. Any questions so far? Well, we have 3, and so we'd probably need 9. We'd need to have one for backups for each precinct.
So you take your vote and you put it in the scanner.
Right, you'd vote on a paper.
On a paper.
Oh. Right.
Oh, my goodness.
And then scan it through the machine.
And then it punches the
chat
out for you.
No, no. No punch cards. No. Yeah, it's kind of like those standardized tests. Yeah, we're going back in time. All right, so now we're going to look at poll books from the past into the present. All right, if any of you can recall those paper poll books. In 2010, state board stopped supplying localities with paper poll books. Here's a picture of the bulky poll books we used in the past. State board provided the poll books and shipped them to each locality. Once we received them, we sorted them and divided them and placed them in binders to send to the precincts. Okay. So now, this fall, we purchased... Well, I'm sorry. In the fall of 2010, we purchased 39 refurbished Dell laptops. And the state had a program to get us started. The laptops cost $100 each. So we jumped on the bandwagon there. Last fall, state, again, had some subsidy, some federal money to help us to purchase new laptops. So we took advantage of that and purchased 12 laptops, new laptops. The cost was, they paid half the cost for us. The electoral board is recommending that we purchase 9 more laptops in this year and 9 more in the following year to and then start a replacement program for the laptops because they were old. They were refurbished. Some of them are not working. And so that was just to get us started. Exactly.
I would suggest that if you look at it the same way you do the vehicle cycle, you know, in place of 5 years, going to be anywhere near adequate laptops. In 2 or 3 years, we're going to be up and running anyway.
All
right.
So this is just an estimated cost without a subsidy, somewhere around $400 or so for 9 laptops. Okay.
Are they just less powerful than a standard laptop?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they come with Windows 8. They were the Lenovo.
Yeah, you're not running something super high. It's not like you're playing.
Right. The only thing we use them for is the poll book. No, you use them more than one day. I mean, we have more than one election, and then we have training. You have to train on them. So they're being used more than once.
It's not like something you're using in an office.
Every day, right.
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's ideally suited to office, but it's not, I mean, there's no, like, dual board
Okay. We're going to talk about the personnel needs and challenges in the office. Here's just a picture of some of the OEs and the work staff in the office. Now, since 2000, we have nearly tripled in our number of registered voters in the county, and we are experiencing an increased volume in the absentee voting process. This has made a significant impact on the workload in the office. As you can see here, as of February 1, this is the total registrant count and the breakdown by precinct.
Go back to your slide, the slide before that one. I'm not going to read the work.
Yeah.
All the responsibilities of the staff and salaries have not been involved.
They have not. I'm sorry, I should have. I'll read that. The workload and responsibilities have increased significantly, but the salary, the staffing and the salaries have not. Yes.
Jeff, would like to increase your staffing. You had a part-time, and you made it full-time, or you gave it two part-times.
You gave us some temporary part-time staff, yes.
You made it one full-time.
No, we have not made that a full-time.
So you brought on an extra part-time.
Right, we have temporary. We have temps.
Well, that's...
Yeah.
The times you needed for staffing is
increased. Right, at the periods that we need, we had the budget for it this past fall. And so I bring that up because I'd like that continued. Please. Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, just as an example, this past November, we had 943 people vote absentee in person in the office. And it takes about 10 to 20 minutes when a person is voting in the office, depending on the needs of that person. Each individual is different. Some people come right in, know what to do, and some people you have to take them through it step by step. When a person votes by mail, it could take 20 or more minutes because there's so much more involved in that. From taking the phone call, you never know how long you're going to be on the phone with the person. From mailing an application to the person, receiving and recording receipt of the returned application, verifying and processing the application, preparing the ballot, mailing the ballot, verifying the reports, receiving and processing the returned ballot. Because of the changes that have taken place in the types of equipment that we use, the way officers of elections are trained, the increase in our voting population, as well as the increase in absentee voting, the need to have trained temporary or seasonal office staff is imperative. As you can see from this list, our temporary staff and seasonal staff workers are trained to assist customers from registration from voter registration to absentee voting to transporting equipment to assisting the OE's training and to the preparation of election supply boxes, just to name a few. So therefore, I'm asking that you would continue the funding. This is what was allotted to us this past fall, and if you would continue that, I'd appreciate it. And with that, I thank you for your time. Any questions?
Any questions from space? Any access now on the line?
No, sir.
Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm not seeing it.
Jerry Wakeman, Social Services Board, would like to present.
What's your question?
Is there anyone from the Social Services Board that would like to present?
I'm here, but I
can pull Susan's slides if there's about 5 or 6 slides.
Oh, and am I the only one from the board?
Yeah, sure.
You are, and I'm here.
I'd ask Steve to make the presentation, and I'd like the opportunity to speak after.
Yes, sir.
So the slides that were forwarded are just a quick overview of about 5 or 6 slides. Shows the breakdown of local and federal and state funding, the dollars flowing into our county budget for our social service. We get a significant portion of their operating budget comes from federal money and then some state money as well. But that's a significant portion of what they do. And then the program funding covers these kinds of areas and to that dog like where the significant amount is just as focused on those program funding areas. And there's a lot more funding that goes into it than that. You'll see that.
So who is breakdown is from federal and state?
Do you remember, it's much higher for federal,
yeah.
Like 75% or 80% federal and a small percentage of state that's predominantly federal.
And depend on the program.
Right, we can probably break down the revenue slide for you. It's on our spreadsheet with the floor. It's on your revenue slide that beyond the work shows federal and state money for social services. And then the federal and state dollars total. Almost $15 million worth of funding that comes out of federal and state. And again, it doesn't break it down in this slide, but for these kinds of programs, for Medicaid, for SNAP, for food assistance, things like that, those come predominantly from federal dollars and some from state dollars as well. And these dollars don't come directly through the county budget, but they support the programs that social services are responsible for validating the need. Validating the requirements for that person, verifying that they meet the eligibility criteria, and then all that happens to our social services department.
So notice that federal state funds have decreased. Federal funds have decreased pretty sharply, but I'm not entirely convinced that TANF or SNAP or anything like that the needs decrease. I'm obviously the Medicaid portion has gone down, so I'm kind of curious as to exactly where the feds are going back and why. Is that a result of sequestration or? Something else going on that
you
don't know about, what
the
case
could be. Well, here, what I would say is federal, gone from 985,000 down to 773,000, which leaves you $212,000 shy of federal money and social services. It's a heck of a lot to have kind of make up in my answer.
You guys know if that's a preliminary number? We haven't got a full number yet? Last year, school's going to go through the year?
Not 100% for sure, but I believe the number, once they provide that number, that's where it's set.
That's the number. So plus, we don't know what's driving that number at this point in time. I'd be interested to know
exactly. Let me ask you this. Why is there a $52,000 difference between the amended FY13 and the...
And the adopted?
Well, they're showing 782. And the FY13 budget was 834.
So remember, you carried over money that was one-time money. It was carried over from fiscal year 12 to fiscal year 14 for part-time support, staff support assistance. So that doesn't carry to the base for the following year.
Just carries over.
It carries over and spent that year, but it doesn't get carried over again unless you had money not to be carried over again. It's just money that was carried forward. Like the $66,000 for the schools. Was money left over in fiscal year 12 got carried over for expenditure in fiscal year 13 rather than going back to the fund balance. In this case, the social services department, I think, carried over $33,000.
It was $30,000 for part-time, and then the other difference was reflected with VRS and the increase in FICA and then all personnel costs.
See, you're not carrying over what you're showing for $44,000.
I'm not sure which.
So you don't know what the carrier is going to be.
Well,
forget the adopted budget. It has nothing to do with what's on the sheet as far as comparison. All the comparisons, all the plus minuses, and all the percentages are based on column C on there, the fiscal year 13 amended budget, because that's what was actually operated with, and column D, the county administrator's budget.
Right, and you can hold that story over mine, it's counted in the amended budget.
It's in the amended budget, yes, because you appropriated that money to that department for that fiscal year. It was in the amended budget, it wasn't part of the adopted budget.
Yeah, and when Mr. Oliver Strati has said that the number that is being reflected here in column B isn't necessarily going to be the entire budget, that potentially would be in June. There is potential for carryover money that would actually be added in to that budget column. There would be no carryover money from social services.
It's conceivable if they have money.
That's what Mr. Oliver Strati would like to see.
It's conceivable money for carryover.
That's what Bob's
trying to say. The decision is not for the money there.
Could we understand what it is that the social services director requested in our budget for fiscal 14?
Yes, we'll get to the drill down. So the breakdown of all of my dollars from outside and from in comes down to where it's really just 5% local and 95% federal state. Again, not all the dollars passed through the Savannah County's budget in the last few departments. They are dollars that are spent on Savannah County's programs and citizens, but we don't get the dollars for those. It just comes out straight up federal, straight out of state. The local funding is a much smaller piece, and it's about $2 or $2.1 million total that actually goes to the SSR. And then one thing I know that social services really wants to stress is that they do have a lot of folks that have gone in and out of their department the last several years, and it's a pretty huge turnover. It would be hard to ignore this number of staff turnovers in there. And based on their estimates of their reviews with departing personnel, Susan points out that 11 of the people have left because before higher pay or in combination with stress on the job. Stress on the job certainly is a significant part of working in social issues and learning health care, but financial stress because there are a lot of pay bans at our social service department that are suspending less jobs in the area. I've got the value.
But if you're going for red, and that's 24% for two forms. That's rather, I mean, if you're discussing a huge turnover, a quarter of it's due to poor performance, then that's an issue all by itself.
Yeah,
bees
and
stress.
Yeah, and that's the supervisors who have so much that they can't train those people. So it's a cycle, really. Because they have to train, and it's right training.
I think the question is whether you're asking the director of social services and social services board.
Sure.
And that's the last slide, and certainly the push to citizens that need support from social services, we really need to make sure we adequately fund those programs and the staff, and they can explain it to the people that they're
there. Mr. Gardner, do you want to address the board?
I don't care.
Did you want to address the board?
Is this all?
Yes, sir.
This is Len Gardner. I'm a member of the Social Services Board, and I didn't plan to speak here, but I seem to be the only one in the audience to do it. First, let me say, when I saw the budget for fiscal 14 for the county, I was very impressed. I thought, without speaking to the details of each department, I thought the presentation of the budget for fiscal 14 was one of the best I'd ever seen here in the county. I haven't seen the data here of what the board and our social services director actually requested as a bottom line. One of the things to mention is that, you know, we're facing a big change here as Obamacare comes online. We can't really predict precisely what effect that's going to have on social services. Most likely, it's going to be additional support and program monies coming into the county, but how that's going to impact us, we're not sure. The monies coming in will probably be 100% federal, but somebody on our payroll has to do the administering of that, those funds, has to determine their eligibility and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of man hours that goes into working with these funds, even though the program funds themselves are 100% federal. There's a lot of demand on the locality. What can you tell me is the bottom line that we requested? I didn't bring my figures with me.
$790,000.
$790 was requested, and what is being proposed?
$800. No. I apologize.
$796,600 is the county administrator's.
$790 was the fiscal 13 number?
From local, yes.
From local, and what is the proposed local money for 14?
$790. So, right here, Mr. Gardner, the $834 was last year, but that was with carryovers from the previous fiscal year. And then the proposed budget for this year is $790,000. Essentially, almost level funded from the year before. It was $782,000, went to $790,000. But the what is taken off is the carryovers from fiscal year $12. It's actually an $8,000 increase.
Yeah. Which presumably were needed in fiscal 13. Otherwise, we wouldn't have carried them over. So we're essentially getting a reduction. Is that the proposal?
You're getting an $8,000 increase.
What's that?
You're getting an $8,000 increase from the base. Yes, sir.
Of course, as a matter of principle, I can't stand here and approve a decrease, but or recommend one. But I would certainly defer to our full board and county social services director to protest any reduction in from 1 year to the next.
It's an increase.
Okay.
We requested $790,000, and it's an increase of about $8,000.
Oh, okay. And that's reflected in this?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's fine. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Are you okay with an increase?
Well, I'm okay with an increase, right?
All right. In the disclosure, that's not exactly correct.
Right.
Yeah. The request includes a lot more than $790,000. I understand that. Yeah. $790 is what we could come to agreement on. Everything else, the additional personnel are highlights.
Yeah, right.
And that was in discussion.
Right.
In your discussion.
And
it's highlighted in their spreadsheet. Right.
And there was a request for 5 additional staff, but we that's in discussion.
That does not reflect it in the...
Yes.
That's not reflected, right, in our figure.
That's not.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so we have that request in with you. I will say there's one thing that the Social Services Board is planning to do, and that is to go to a 40-hour work week. As you probably know, our work week has been for years been a 37.5-hour work week. However, the Social Services staff has continued to work 40 hours or more, but they are paid for those additional hours at the standard rate, not at overtime rates until it gets beyond 40 hours in the week. So we are requesting the funds to cover the 40-hour work week there. I believe that's reflected in the numbers that you have.
I'm not sure that it is. Okay, I don't think their budget proposal includes going from 37.5 to 40. I'm not positive. I'll have to talk to Susan. But my budget proposal for the pay
them to 40 paid, as well as whatever total there would be based on how people stand.
Sure.
So the dollars are accounted for in the budget if they're accounted for in the social services budget already, which I don't think they are. If they are, then we've got a double count, and we reduce it.
So, I leave that with as a project to be further fleshed out.
Something like this, we need a sort of a special layout for social service to run those down so we, I mean, I have no idea really where we are. I just find it really confusing.
Well, I'm sure at some point in time, Mr. Muir will come to brief us on.
Easy to do, because all we do is we run straight down this. You've got the subject matter expert there to explain it. But any questions that you have on the basic things, we can answer now because the explanations are right off the side. We can tell you what the dollars are programmed for, and we can tell you what level of rigor we put on those dollars to see if they matched up with historical trends, with actual expenses year to date. So everything that's got to agree on it, I and my staff agreed with whatever department head it was, because we've actually seen what those dollars should be spent on. And we've looked at historical records for the last four previous fiscal years, plus actual expenses year to date. Now, the only differences on here are really things that are completely related to the request for six new staff.
Yeah. And the other thing is, in order to find out what they requested, you have to go back to their budget. We have had budgets where the requested amount was in that.
Well, if you
but I have to go back.
Right here on the bottom of the screen, we can pull up anything we want that has the explanation. That has more detailed explanation. And it has items out there and also the written explanation of the various kinds of programs and what the increases. So we can go back to that. The summary, though, is on the first page. That's what we work off of. And we can go back and find more detail if required. And then certainly, anytime that here's a budget summary in word format and can explain it. It's much easier to do when you've got the direct representative here who will answer your question. But again, for every budget you see, if there's green on it, between that department head, director, supervisor, my client staff, and myself, those are the numbers you agree on because we saw reasonable evidence through 4 years of budget history plus this fiscal year actuals to be able to validate those numbers. The only ones, again, the pink ones.
Thank you. Any further discussion from the board? I guess at some point I'm going to have Ms. Muir back in, but she's feeling
a little bit more. So, Mr. Chairman, we've got library representatives, fire and rescue representatives, Dr. Lilly, our health department is here tonight, City Hospital Library Director. Mr. Thompson's not here, but his request is pretty standard based on previous years, and I'm sure that each of these people can address their portion of the budget if they have any questions. So when your report is ready, you can start with one, just go down through them and address questions. And I can call there to see
what
you want to do.
What is the pleasure of the board? Would you like to drag everybody up there, or does anybody have any specific questions for the Library Fire and Rescue Health Department? Any specific questions at this point in time? Everybody's happy with the Library Fire and Rescue Health Department?
I would request that we give an opportunity for them to come up and just say a word while they're here, so they may have some clarification.
Is there anybody who would like to come and speak on that? Ms. Hoffman seems like she's good. Chief President, sir. Come on up. You're the next
I don't know if I like that word. Good evening, members of the board. Just want to go over one item on our budget, the $150,000 for the ambulance replacement for Lake Monticello. I have John Lai with me from Lake Monticello Rescue, who is going to get into a little bit of the reasoning for that request. Okay, John?
Okay, thank you, Chief Brent, and thank you for the opportunity to speak here. I'd like to also thank you for your support of Fire and Rescue over the years. It's been much appreciated. I'm the Assistant Chief for Operations for Lake Monticello Rescue, and I'm also chairing the truck committee for the replacement ambulances. If you'll permit me to to backstep for just a little bit, give you a little bit of history. The Fire and Rescue Association is charged with developing a budget for all emergency services in the county. As part of that, many years ago, before I was even on the board, they came up with a replacement schedule with alternating chassis, re-chassis and ambulance replacements, such that all the replacements would be staggered so that we would have a relatively flat budget request from year to year, and they wouldn't all come due at the same time. As a result of the economic problems in the county, some of those were deferred, and we're now in a position where two of our ambulances, frankly, are worn out. They have well over 120,000 miles apiece on them, and for an ambulance, that's at the end of its life. In the past year, we have spent roughly $45,000 on maintenance on the trucks. But beyond that, they're out of service for extended periods of time. And if the truck's in the shop being serviced, we can't run emergency calls in the county. And that's why we're requesting that this money be restored to our request. We are in the process, as I mentioned, of replacing one of our two oldest ambulances now. It's a 2005 model ambulance. It's been re-chassised once already, and like I say, it's worn out. The other part of the issue is that Ford is no longer making the cutaway van-style chassis with a diesel engine, so we cannot re-chassis those trucks anymore. We can't put them on a new chassis. As part of the replacement for 554, the one we're replacing, which is our oldest and most decrepit ambulance, we did go out and get an RSAF grant, a 50-50 grant, and between that and the re-chassis money, we'll actually be able to replace that ambulance. However, the 555, the second oldest ambulance, is a 2006. It has been out of service for the past week with electrical issues. It's back in service now, but as I said, it's worn out, it's tired, and we would like to request that you put that money back in the budget so that we can replace those two and keep our trucks on the road. If they're not on the road, we can't be running calls and serving our patients. So that's really the bottom line. I'll be happy to answer any questions pertaining to those trucks if you'd like. Yes, sir, we did apply, and we were actually successful. We got a 50-50 grant, which will pay for half of 554's replacement. And that with the so we were awarded money for re-chassis. So the re-chassis money plus the grant will be able to replace 554. We would like to. We will not be eligible for the April grant. If this money does not come through, that would be our backup plan, would be to go into the September grant cycle for that. It's another 6 months with an ambulance that's in pretty rough shape. We would like to speed that up.
What would be your backup plan after
the first line? Well, mostly because of the timing, we'd like to get the truck ahead of that. By the time we get the money, and I'm going through this now with this, by the time we get approved for the money, get the truck specs written, get the bids back, and then get the truck built, you're looking at roughly 6 months. And so if we apply for a September grant, we won't get the money until December. And so we're looking at this time next year to get the truck. So it puts us roughly a year down the line.
Understood. Yeah, I mean, obviously, if there are any conversations with Mr. Nichols and perhaps Mrs. Screed about, because obviously the county can't apply for those grants on your behalf.
Correct.
Obviously, the most ideal environment would be for Lake Monticello Rescue or Land Rescue to go ahead and apply for those and then have the county backfill in and actually get us back on the cycle. That would be the most common sense approach. But obviously, if you have a gaping need, that's something that needs to be considered. Are the augmented services not assisting in that regard?
That's for personnel. That's not for equipment. No, that is not for equipment. So they will be riding, actually, county trucks, but it's really a personnel issue.
For some reason, I thought that
everything that's on the CIP is not like Monticello. Everything on the CIP is Blue Bend Fire Rescue. They're completely separate. When we do money for Blue Bend, for Lake Monticello, it belongs to them. We're just giving them money. Everything for Blue Bend Rescue, Blue Bend Fire, belongs to the county, and that's why it's on our CIP. So they're two really separate issues. It's confusing even to me, but they are two separate corporations.
So how much money
future. You can't just get the CFP.
That is correct. Well,
it's not good that we will own it. It's not a CFP item. This is money we're.
The current bodies on those two trucks, the trucks we are specking, sure, will go on a pickup truck style chassis, and those will be able to be re-chassied in the future. So we have one of those now. Our three oldest trucks are van style, and they can't be re-chassied any longer. Exactly. That is correct. And that's why we're looking at an ambulance replacement rather than a re-chassis.
Thank you for the
questions from me? Okay, and I do want to add, we were talking about ISO a while ago, and we thank the board for funding us to be able to allow us to purchase the apparatus that we purchased. Part of the ISO rating comes from the type of apparatus that we have, the upgrades we've made since 1990 predominantly. Everything you do in ISO gives you points, and everything we've done improving our fleet has given us points, which helps to get the ratings that we're getting. So we thank you.
Thank you very much.
Just a side question on that.
No. You get the only the points you get is you have to maintain four personnel on a structure fire in your first due area. That's what ISO requires. Just personnel, yeah. A lot of it is the apparatus. Sir? Correct.
Even old
oh, yeah. But no, a lot of ISO is the apparatus, the water supply, and the communication center has points. I forget the, it's like 60%, 40%, 60, 20, 30, something like that. But each section has a percentage of points that they look at. No, I don't think response time was a factor. Yet the biggest thing is you have to have the apparatus with four personnel on it. And you probably get extra points. I have to go back and look, but I think you may get extra points for having additional over that of personnel, but over the four. But it's all in that rating system.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Now, I social services, the only thing we have not decided on is the personnel part. And there's no personnel decided any of these, right?
Assuming that you approve the recommendation based on what is for operation, existing personnel, that Mr. Buehr and I, my staff, went through the validated review, then you wouldn't necessarily need to go dig in deeper on that.
Okay.
If that's the case, then what's remaining is for them to explain to each personnel and how that would affect their operations. And then if you have a specific question about any of those ones, she'd be the best one to ask all of them. If there's plenty of detail, then we can answer that.
Okay. And then on the fire and rescue squad, I have 160,000 that's beside that possibility.
Correct. And that's part of the regular budget spreadsheet in red, which will identify that. The two items that are marked in red, the 65K for a fuel vehicle and the 150K for ambulance. The fire rescue system advocated strongly for the 150K and had said that, you know, of all the things they could do without the ship, they had to. It would be the last one that area people are able to
live on. Yeah, it's 65K.
It's just that in the world of limited resources, maybe that's the one you prefer, but the answer is definitely there.
Okay.
So you're down to the registrar, you've got your questions. Now there are significant amounts of red on there too for polling places and for expansion of polling places. So if you need to ask questions about that, it's going to be a good time to do it, although the platform is really not here.
If the Senate actually passes the
739.
If they actually pass that, when does that mandate come into force? July 1?
No, we'll have till 2016 to get it done.
2016 to comply, okay.
But I don't know that we want to try to do all that at one time or try to implement it year by year.
Do you know when privileges and elections is going to be voting on that?
No, I don't.
Okay.
But there's still the push to go to paper.
Which is totally automatic. It's the way it ought to be done. Okay, carry on.
The Chief Geo statistics on how many people are actually registered for voting in the district was too massive. And I just kind of wonder how many of those people actually vote.
Well, we know the numbers.
Yeah, you know that.
We know the percentage. State Board of Elections tell you that much.
We'll figure out some way to make a little better, maybe do some research to put in there so you got it, make it easier.
because your sheet, because the two-page sheet you've got is numbered, we can just bring some tabs that are numbered, so that you can apply whatever, and you can sort of insert it in, it'll make it look quicker, so that you go straight to the number, because it's on the same line.
Right.
I'm sure Mr. Dahl will look fine and look at it.
Okay, I'm out.
We can always digitize the whole thing, you know, we only do tabs.
Where is that?
There's a PDF, yeah, and it's in the one.
I'm like, we have tabs.
We can always put it on the screen.
Indeed.
And go one department. The second you want to look at anything, I'll just look at it right there.
Thing about it, the department made that.
Can you please explain, I know you explained to us before, but to me anyway, maybe I'm still learning. Go back to one of the budgets for one of the different agencies and tell me about the baseline and all of that.
Okay, so let's go to the county administration.
Okay.
So in this case, county administration, this is the, everything in Greater Cross Top is the first element. So that's the personnel benefits of all insurance and things like that. Everything below that are regular operations, and there's a whole variety of different things. Most of the pages on a full department have about similar types of lines here. They're mostly pretty similar. If you go to an agency budget, it may be much smaller because maybe a single line like health department. But if it's a full department that we fund by line item, you'll see these kinds of things. No telephones and professional services and supplies. Then you've got 1, 2, 3, 4 of actual dollars spent. Not budget. Actual dollars spent in those fiscal years. These are actual. The actuals. They're not adopted budgets. They're not amended budgets. These are actual expenditures. So we look at actual expenditures over the 4 years. Then we say, what is the fiscal year 13 budget? Now, is that amended budget?
That's amended. Okay.
So that's amended budget. Any money that you appropriate for that department through the year is there. Then we go in, while we're meeting with that group, and we look at what the history of these were, what were they made of, because we can look at this to see, in some cases, what things they spent on. Secondly, we go in here and look at the fiscal year 13 actual expenditures year to date. So for instance, let's say right now, even though we're about a month behind, if we go to the professional services under county administrator, you ought to be able to easily see if it's on a regular cyclical basis for that item. About half the money's on, because we're halfway through the year. Now, professional services, it may be just down, $44.50 may be gone because it may have been a front-loaded contract. Or maybe it's a late-loaded contract that hasn't even been spent yet. But we'll know that because we have some expenditures in it. In general, though, we try to look at expenditure trends for that kind of thing. If we get down to the supplies line and we've got $3,000 budget and there's been $500 spent so far this year and we're up to date and we know that's through 6 months, well, if somebody's going and asking for $3,000 again, there would be lots of questions in the work. Why the heck do you need $3,000 when you've only spent $500 so far this year? There are dozens and dozens and dozens of lines like that in budgets all over. My department budget, every other department agency budget. So that's the level of rigor we looked at. Actual expenditure, budget amount for this year, up through the day, and the actual expenditures year to date, we projected to the end of December, even though we hadn't been far along, we projected to have 4 months worth, a third of their spending by the time the agreement was reviewed, and then multiply by three to see what it's going to look like over the year. And then, when you go into this column and this column, what I ask everyone to do is to take their need from this year, take their budget from this year and what was needed in there, and anything that was an ongoing need, that wasn't a one-time, wasn't a special program, it was an ongoing need, part of their baseline, put it in this column. Strip out everything out of that that was in one time. If you bought a special software this year and you don't need that again for 2 more years, don't put it in your budget. Don't pad it and lay it in there. Just put what you need to operate next year. Then, let's assume you need something special this year that wasn't done this year, but next year you need it. Let's assume you want another version, or you want a different software, or you would need more supplies because you're implementing 2 extra polling stations, or things like that. Then your baseline plus would reflect the increased cost of that. Then, wherever agreed to these columns, wherever the number that I and my staff agreed to that the department head or director or constitutional officer was part green. So it may have been a baseline, it may have been a baseline plus, but whichever mark green, that put in my county administrator's column, and the total of that down here is what is reflected on your master sheet that you paid for. So, as an example, this one, you go across here, that's for convention and education.
six now. I know some of the reasons. This is kind of an anomaly. We had a lot of turnover in county commissioner over the last 3 years. Well, somebody comes in for a short time or they're interim, they're not necessarily going to go to the same conferences that somebody's here full-time doing. Back here, you still have somebody full-time. Then it kind of changed, and then went down a little bit, now it came back up, and you had somebody full-time again, and then now it came back down, because that was the question. I'm not sure exactly where it will be, but what I did is we stripped everything out of that that we thought was special costs, and we didn't necessarily have to have the baseline, and it's 1,200. But based on the rationale and the types of things that are listed off the side, that we thought was appropriate to spend on to go to different kinds of conferences for myself, for Mrs. Weaver, for Mrs. Parrish, because they all come up with this budget for HR, for the board, myself, those kinds of dollars I put there. And then whichever one was decided on, that's what got marked in the unit column, then it's listed out here, and the bottom total dollars what went on that master sheet to pay. So, sir?
Yeah. Tip back to, give me an example, Board of Supervisors. Board of Supervisors budget.
Just thinking.
Go down to notes for brand.
You have numbers on the right hand side.
Well, I can't see. I'm reading off my sheet here.
Under the notes.
Facilitator for BOS retreat.
Right. There are items in here that I put in. Plan for based on previous historical
process. That's not going to happen.
It may not happen, but somebody has to program for those things in case you want it. If you want an offsite next year because three new supervisors get elected, and you want to have a strategic planning session, the dollars are there. If you don't want a budget, you just plan it out.
Right.
But my recommendation is that you identify those things, including nameplates and plaques, five people. I have no private ownership, but you can take on anything you want. But that's why it's there, because it had been done in the previous year. And because that was kind of a track record of how we did it.
In my mind, that's program that can be saved right there.
Certainly can. And we can start lining things up.
You do that on the 13th.
Anytime.
You do that on the 13th. You're meeting with you, Master? As you said,
right. And as Joe and I discussed, we attack these things.
Yeah, certainly can. And anything that you identify that you believe needs to be taken out or you direct me to take out, all we'll do is we'll highlight the spreadsheet, mark it in blue, and the blues are your deductions. Okay? Or I'll mark it right, so it stands up. Whatever we'll do, we'll mark it the same way all the way through.
And if you sign this spreadsheet,
you know, so you're
going to
sign
it,
show you where
you're
at. You don't ever want to do that. Because what happens is, let's say you ended up committing to knock down $150,000 now, and then you find out further down the road that you commit something else, you commit something else on this $150,000 shot adding up, now you all of a sudden you bust up your budget. You've got to do that all one shot, and you have the total overhead information, not as you go along. Easy.
And that's
this is the supervisor's budget. This is the supervisor's budget, though.
Right? This is the county
budget. No, this is the supervisor's budget.
We searched the board of supervisors. This is your head.
Yeah. You don't want to do this piece of the You want to do the full array of information so that you can prioritize between chassis, this, that, and everything else. Only at the end of the presentation do you do that.
I would suggest that I would concur with Mr. Kennedy, because you've got a significant amount of people that are still coming. And I know you maybe don't want to hear all the different people, different times, but while they're here, bring them up and ask questions so you can make notes on your document. And then when you've got those sessions in March 13th and March 27th, you will have heard from everyone by then. And all you're working on is a big chunk of school when it comes formal, because you'll learn about them too. And then you can start pulling from wherever you want. You'll have a good idea. And any scenarios you want to try, for instance, all I've got to do right here is go back to here and take this one and put up. If I go right here and just say, there's the total, and I say equals minus 4,000, because that's the one you want to take it out. We hit it. Now you've got a $4,000 excess in revenues over expenditures, and sooner or later the budget has to balance out so we can put it someplace else, or that goes back to fund balance and then move it down to fund balance one.
And this 0.79.
And that's
the 0.79 will stay exactly there. It's not in the budget for $4,000.
Unless you take no. Yeah. I'm talking to you once that adds up.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So with 400. Sean, so 400 down 150.
Yes. The is that for instance? Yes. So do you do that in other cities of March? You don't do it now. If you were to go down there and start adding more, how would you go priority based on the issue first?
No, I'm saying Eric, we want to chase them. Can you and Eric want to take the PDF on the big budget book? And I want to link from this sheet down to every different side in there, just like you do with the budget board package. And we'll reload those out to tomorrow or Friday and share them out. So your big budget book, this, the right version, you can go to this page and just click on it. It'll take you to the detail sheet.
Now, yeah, we don't want to do that. We did some of that last year. We just come to Alabama and got lost. Is Aaron taking notes?
Yes.
He did last back year.
But again, as you go back to this, we already know right now, because this will stay in there. There's your tracker. What we did is we started at 196,559. That was the county administrator's recommendation. You pull 4K off it. So anytime we do those, we will have a trail on what goes into those items, and then we'll, of course, record them.
And what you're saying is, when you get down to the bottom line, you need more money, you can put it out of fund balance.
No, that's your decision.
Yeah, but where are you going to get it?
That's your decision.
Passes.
The budget is balanced right now, and if you want more, then we got to figure, either you got to cut something, and I can help you find areas to cut it, that's what your intention is, or you've got to pull out fund balance, or you've got to raise the tax. You all know that. But I can help you get to wherever spot you want. You just have to direct them what your intention is.
My only point is there's some money in there.
I can help you get to 96 cents if you want.
96
cents. I'm not sure you want to do that. If you want to get to 86 cents or 46 cents, I can help that too. Because we can manipulate the budget to move around. But you obviously understand.
I was the other number. 24 cents is that what you mean?
I thought I was going to have a different county administrator.
What you're saying for us are hard, but we can manipulate this any way you want on the fly to show you exactly the impact. Whether it's CIP changes, or it's operating expenditure budget changes, debt service changes, general fund, I mean, fund balance changes, it's all on the fly. You can see instantly what the changes are.
We want to move on to revenues and expenditures.
Yeah, revenues and expenditures. Ms. Weaver?
No, I was just going to ask, when we get through this a little bit more, I'm still curious about your next year, 2015. How is this going to dovetail into that? We surely will have some feel as to what's been the following year.
This is 400 can address it. We talked about it at length. And
yes.
We can almost assure you that it can't stay like this.
Okay.
Just because of VRS life insurance, VRS contribution to retirement and health costs next year, there's almost no way you can stay where you're at. We are at 17.85 in VRS right now. It's not going to be 17.85 next year. So 2 years this way, they're biennial. So there's a change. It will change. It has for every biennial before. So there's a significant amount of dollars that will change. We don't know those numbers yet, but we certainly can do some projections however we want to show you what the impact will be next year.
In the state budget, as I recall in VRS, it was like $650 million that he had pulled out to build the state budget. How is that going to impact that? Is that what the risk that we're talking about?
No, we're talking about the increase this year. This year, the county pays 12.85% towards retirement of someone's budget, and the employee pays 5% of their pay towards the VRS. Next year, it will not be a 17.85% number. It will be a 22 number, or 21 number, or whatever it happens to be. It will be a higher number. It will still be likely 5% of employees, and whatever the number goes up to, now multiply that times the total salary to figure out what that percentage is going to be. That along the VRS life costs, because that will change and adjust next year. And as I've explained in the last meeting, I think there are huge changes that will be affecting us in healthcare costs. And that's why I'm so hot to moderate how we design our program now, and maybe we'll look at different programs. This is Ms. Parrish did a review of six or seven or eight different localities this week to identify what their healthcare costs are for the plans they have, and how much contribution they make, and they're much more aligned with where I would like to get to, 100%, two-thirds, 50%. But
planning costs are much lower than our planning costs. And I'm not quite sure how some of the fines of $3,000 for an employee-only plan. I don't know how somebody gets there. But we're researching that to find out if we can make any recommendations to the board that would still serve our employees well, but also have moderate costs for the county, because there's $3,000.
In education, they haven't had raises either.
Indeed.
So,
well, in the last 2 years they have. I don't have their sheet here with me. I've got a sheet that shows what they were from 2005 up through 2009 or 10. They actually had a cut in 9 or 10, and then a little bit made back, but then neutral since then.
Yeah, they were going to miss the ARA money too. So.
Right, exactly. There's been a variety of different impacts, but there was significant raises, maybe for the sake of the county staff, but, 6.5 and 4.5 and 3.5 and 7 and 5. And there's a list, and they're actually presenting tonight to the school board. So I've seen the slides there. But again, I'm sure you all don't agree, but I think I've been talking all the time, but I see county employees, not schools and county government. And so anytime I can get to a system that really kind of affects county employees, I just think it's a better place to get to. Elmhart, Charlottesville, other county, Hanover County, all have one health plan for schools and for county government. That just doesn't make sense to me. But when you look at the pay plans, while a teacher or a technician or an IT person or a finance director don't all get paid the same, there's different scales. Within that whole system, the presentation that I gave last week that showed this, I would like to be on this kind of plan over time so we can at least stay reasonably competitive. I don't expect this to be the highest. Certainly wouldn't want us to be the lowest, but I'd like to remain competitive. And the people that are farthest behind that we have good dollar accounts for are the ones maybe we bump them a little bit. And maybe next year, maybe we can't afford 5, 4, 3, 2. Maybe it's 3, 2, 1, 1. Maybe it's 2, 1, 1, 1. Maybe it's nothing next year. Or maybe next year, because it works out, it's 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. I don't know. But this plan, at least, is reasonably fair and consistent. And we can track it and then target someone if you need to, if you've got good rationale. But I hate to get down to this employee deserves this, and this person deserves this, and this person. It's not a person-based thing. This is a job-based thing. And that skill set. So,
and you said some jobs are only worth it, whatever they might pay.
Without question. You would not pay for a county administrator in Fluvanna County the same you pay for a county administrator in Alamar County, or in Charlottesville as a city manager, or county manager at a suburban county in New York, and you would never expect maybe some cost of living raises because the cost of the change, but not pay raises.
Well,
go ahead, sir.
That's what bothers me is I don't know if this budget is a good budget or not.
I believe it is,
yes.
But I would like you all to pick it apart so that I can defend it, mm-hmm. And then you will feel comfortable with the same level of rigor. And you all know, because you've been doing this longer than I've been in this job, you know things where there was a problem before, there was a pocket of this, a question about this. I'm hoping we can resolve and answer those questions. If we have not, we will certainly learn from that. But my expectation is that you're going to dig this apart, and when you get to the point, just like an inspector, when you come in, you sort of look at your old records, and you look through 10 of the first 20 records, and you find lots of odd eggs, then you dig deep. If you look through 10 of the first 20 records and everything's practically perfect, that gives you confidence that's how the format is. So I would hope that you'd ask lots of questions and we can answer the questions for you. Sometimes it takes the subject matter experts. But I would hope that you don't have to do the level of detail work because we put a lot of rigor on individual lines and details in the budget.
Okay.
And I'm very confident in that. And anything that I thought was Big Rock, or New Start, or a really odd difference change in the program, I mark those red so there can be a discussion.
I think what Tom is getting at is repeatability. Is this repeatable next year?
Sure.
And you probably read this whole thing, I
have. I have, yeah.
And
but I guess I also want to try to get back into it.
Yeah. And the beauty of this,
that
we talked about the most part, except for the undeterminable things, it is repeatable. And you always have the opportunity to move money around in the existing numbers and the existing available money from this year to going into next year to make it repeatable. And you have to agree that we're in a lot better shape than we were February 13th last year.
It is repeatable, Mr. Alvar, but truly, there are three or four or five big rock items
that you
absolutely have to be added on the existing budget already for next year. So you will know some of the things through the years it goes, whether it's PRS, PRS Life, health insurance, and there are a couple other things. We'll make a list of those kind of things, but assume that if you want to keep the same kind of spending next year, same programmatic coverage, that this tax rate could not stand unless you pull money out of fund balance or unless you increase the tax rate to get more revenue, just because there are new costs that are going to be on top of this. There's not a lot of things in this budget that actually go away next year. Because it's pretty raised.
The only one you really can control, you can control CIP. You can back off, if you can back off the vast majority of what's in CIP or delay it, you can just kick everything down the road. That's an easy solution there. VRS costs are, it's not a variable, it's a constant. There's no other, there's $17 billion short in the VRS. So a $91 billion budget. Blame everybody in Richmond for that. So healthcare costs, sounds like we're addressing that problem. So that's something, but a lot of the things that are driving, in some of it, you're dealing with a property tax form of taxation where you really, it doesn't really alter the economy, it alters the property and value. So you can't, a lot of the things that are just being discussed are just things that are being done to a locality. There's not a lot you can do. We can't back out of VRS.
I'm going to go ahead and crystal ball, so we don't know if those numbers are ever, we're not going to know anyway.
Yeah.
Even if we were at 70 cents,
you don't know.
It sounds good.
Well,
but I don't know if it is.
It's a 2 cent decrease.
Yes.
Alright.
Well, yes, sure.
Which, if you look back in the last 4 years,
the Commonwealth continues to pile on the unfunded mandates question as well, as the healthcare costs continue to increase. And ACA actually comes online. There's 134 different localities that have to eat that. And there's only a couple of ways of dealing it. You can either start deeply cutting services. You can find economic development that's going to go ahead and absorb that cost. Or you can raise taxes on the average homeowner.
And in our county, services won't change a nickel. Personnel.
Yeah. You're no longer talking about services. You're talking about personnel that are actually affecting that. So those are your three outs. We've been whacking away at services for some time. I think we're just about as lean and efficient as we're going to get. It's either economic development or it's tax increases at this rate. That's where you're stuck.
If you look at Robinson, Burner, and Cox, which we did last year, we should have had $1.22.
Yes.
If we had stayed on the previous year, that's exactly where we're at.
And what we should be happy with.
Not there. Exactly.
And
we have that $1.22
budget for
the case. No, because he doesn't have a crystal ball.
He has a lot of things.
The first trajectory of spending, he said, you keep going this way, here's where you're at.
He has some information.
And the beauty of it is we're not on that track.
Precisely.
I would suggest that to help this discussion that you're in, if you allow Robert to go forward with Greg's intentions, we'll really address some of these things that you can point out some pockets of good news and not so good news or things we have to plan for, and then that may just help support your discussion.
And in her presentation, then she could mention what you said you would bring up tonight, but what was the balance left from last year?
Indeed.
Good evening. That's great. I don't have to do it. I don't have to make any bad jokes. We're going to start out talking about revenues. And basically, we're going to talk about the five largest revenues to Fluvanna County. We all know real property tax, as you just talked about, what we tax our citizens is the bulk of our revenue. Commonwealth of Virginia is second. Personal property tax, the tax on cars, etc. Then public
public service corporations tax and sales tax. And then I'll, now I'm going to go into detail on...
How are you basing the $400,000 in delinquent tax?
Yes, and how about if I talk about that? I have a slide on that, so I'll talk about that.
You put $700,000 in for delinquent taxes to build it,
wasn't Correct. There's $700,000 in addition to what we assume are going to be the tax bills. We are assuming that we'll collect $700,000. Correct. Right, and I have a slide on that, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Of course, this is a calculation formula that you're familiar with. I think we've seen it a couple times this year. And what the point I wanted to bring across here is that some of these numbers we don't know yet. We are very close on some of them, but some of them we do not know and we won't know for a couple months. The overall total taxable real property value at the $2.607 billion, that can still be supplemented through October. So Mr. Sheridan can still go out and pick up new homes until November 1st and add to our tax base. If that happens after the June billing, then he will be able to add it to the December billing.
Looks to me like it's as broad as it is long now. Why worry about that? Why not just cut it off in the 1st of July? You know, you pick it up in the following year rather than...
I think that's because of the state code. Is that correct?
Why do we worry about that?
We don't have an option, Mr. Weaver. Whether we budget with the plan for it in our budget figures at this point in the year or not is certainly the board's call. But code requires us to actually supplement any property that gets a certificate of occupancy, you know, your final inspection. But I mean, if you get it by November the 1st, you have to get a supplemental bill for that year.
Yeah, but what I'm saying basically is for the budget building, we can build the budget anyway. We want to why worry about, oh, we're going to get another $30,000.
And we aren't worrying about it right now. I mean, this is the number we have today, and this is what we're building the budget on.
The point is we're building it on the best concrete foundation we can. Well, we're going to get some more concrete later. We just don't know how much. So I don't want to have you spend based on what you think might come. That's what you're getting. We're just telling you, by the way, there's likely more to come later on. Not huge amounts.
Well, just forget about it. How much is it?
Okay, then we come down to the land use, conservation easements, and open space agreements. This is the number that is currently on the books, and it will probably stay very close to that same number. There still may be a few people that come in or drop off of the program, but that's probably a very good number. The number that we're really not... we're close on but not comfortable yet with is the next number, which is the tax relief for elderly, because they have until March 15th to come in and apply for that, and they so it's an annual thing. They have to come in every year and apply for it. We're using an estimate based on last year. The tax relief was $44 million.
Yeah,
we'll get the tax relief. Is that March 15th date, Mr. Sheridan? Is that March 15th date a state mandate, or could we move the date if we wanted to?
It's in air code. I believe it's also state mandate.
Yeah, it's state code. Okay. So if you're going to earlier require, then you don't figure, but it's state.
Dr. Nichols, the reason for that, frankly, is that they can't come in and make an application without being able to show the previous year's
taxes.
They have to have the W-2s. They got to have their savings, checking account statements. So some of the 1099-Rs, like in retirement and real estate stuff, they don't get until about this time, so that's why.
But this land use, what's that figure? What are we actually figuring that is going to be more or less because of that tax rate going up and the land not going down per se, like
I think that's very accurate, Mr. Weaver. The land use applications have to be submitted before January 1st, as you well know. The only thing that's going to be impacted on generally now is, unfortunately, if you happen to be in a delinquent position by the 1st of April, Ms. Lindner's office notifies me, and that's any delinquency. Code requires that if you're in a delinquent tax position, personal property, real estate from previous year or years, we are not allowed to give you a tax relief program. So that number actually may come down. I don't think it's going to increase.
You mean so people who are land use are going to be paying less in taxes this coming
year? No, sir. Not that.
Then
I don't mean that.
Are they going to be paying more?
I can tell you that they're going to feel the impact of two increases.
100% more?
The increase that, with the respect to the rate that they are going to be charged for, is going to go up about 60%.
So they're going to be paying 60% more than they paid the year before?
Based on the rate. Then they're also going to pay an increase based on what the tax rate does from 59 to whatever y'all set that at. It sounds high, and it is. The reality of the numbers are that it's a little less than a dollar an acre increase from 2012 to this 2013 calendar year.
Dollar an acre more?
About a little less, but about a dollar. That's what I briefed Farm Bureau and I briefed the forestry community at length last week. I could give you specific numbers. I have them with me. But what it really boils down to for those folks that are in land use, and I'm one of them, don't have a lot, but I'm in it, is that it's going to be a little less than a dollar an acre increase over this
what
past
year. Before.
Yes, sir. That's the real math, but the percentage is huge. I went from $150 an acre to $250 an acre on open land, and from $275 to $400. That's a 60% increase. That's what that represents. And that increase is just the rate increase. Now, if y'all go from 59 to anything above that increase, because see, if you're in land use, it's not an equalization situation.
But you could have lowered that rate on land use too.
Yes, sir. I could have, but I think that.
But you didn't.
It's been consistent since 2007 because you can only adjust it during years of reassessment. And based on a review of our surrounding counties, we were about a third of what a number of them were. Albemarle and Louisa are lower than we are. But they're the only ones. I could talk to you at length. I don't want to occupy all the time on that. Yeah, it's gone up. I mean, you pay more in land use, but it's still on a 20-acre piece of property, with the increase I've factored in and the increase I think y'all will, I'll just say 80 cents tax rate, they go from $24 tax bill on 20 acres, not per acre, for 20 acres, to 41. $24 last year, $41 this year, if you had 20 acres in land use. And if you're not in land use, it's $643. So $41, so it's still a, but those 20 acres don't have...
$17.
And those are real numbers, they're not guesses. But the advantage to the county, obviously, is that you don't have five houses on those 20 acres with kids in them to educate. There are trees or feed.
And I would suggest, I know this is sometimes painful for our Commissioner Redder because he gets beat up about this stuff, but I would love to see a chart for you all to use any time that it's going from 24 to 41 for 20 acres. The same person that owns 20 acres of town land use, what their costs are. Because it's astronomically different. I think you've quoted $2.5 million in decreased revenue for land use.
Right.
But we got an almost immeasurable benefit from land use too, because we keep purer lands and farmlands and trees. I mean, it's wonderful, but people sometimes don't understand the trade-offs.
To put a point on it, I'm getting beat up pretty badly, but that's comes with all that big pay.
That's all right. You gave me an answer.
Yeah, I know, but if anybody has a specific interest, 100 acres in land use, pay $203 with the increases. Not land use, pay $1,600. Yeah. The farming community and the forestry community, or whatever.
Mel?
Yes, sir.
You gave me one of these. You have some of those?
I actually have a couple with me. I could get you some.
I think we
have. All that represents is, and you know, this doesn't bother and affect the board, but it affects me, obviously, my office. And I knew I'd have to brief the farming community and the forestry community. I only have one, I've got two actually. I'll go get some copies. All this is just a...
in my office.
If we, at the proposed rate increase that I've presented, what you would pay if you had 50 acres in land use. And I figured at 81 cents, which was equal, anything less than that, touch less, anything more, touch more. So...
And it hasn't gone up in 6 years.
It has not. It has not. So in a nutshell, you could look at the math. You know, it's a no-win scenario, simple as that for me. You know, it's kind of like being on the board and setting the tax rate. You just think that's fair.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
So anyway, this is the basic calculation for real property tax. If we get into a situation where you want to play with the rate, we can change the rate and see how that affects the bottom line. This is just a history of last 12 years of the tax rate in Fluvanna County.
Mr. Nichols, I mean, this is always sort of one of those numbers. I mean, obviously, 71 cents in 2002, I mean, even though it's 71 cents in 2002, the average rate of taxation, a heck of a lot less than what it is today, just because of property values being affected in that number. It's one of those things that we never quite truly show the public or illustrate and whatnot.
And you can see a reassessment here.
Okay. Just pick out like sort of one. It'd be interesting to find out precisely. It'd be interesting to find out precisely what the median home values were in each year, 2001, 2002, 2003.
And then how about what the
pennies
were?
Well, exactly.
And then what, we'll add that. We'll just do a chart that shows home prices, maybe cash rates, and what the penny was. Those years, we'll just put on a chart.
Yeah, so we have the median home in Fluvanna County for 2001 at a 68 cent tax rate. What was the average impact? What was the median impact per tax rate taxpayer in 2003, 2004, 2005?
What was the magic?
Because Ford's going to look at ours. We went from 350 a penny, it was a penny to 240.
The property values dropped.
Property values dropped 35.
45, 40%.
This is a comparison just for the last 4 years of our surrounding localities. And nobody else has a proposed tax rate yet. Everybody's is further behind us in terms of schedule. Like I looked at Louisa, they don't adopt their budget till June. So right now the only proposed number we have out there for 14 is ours. So...
of course, they've got two new schools, too. And again, this is another one of those numbers where it's kind of useful. I mean, you look at Goochland County at 53 cents, you say, gee, what a deal with their average, their median home value is $350,000. Versus in Fluvanna, you're $200,000, and so your actual tax burden is actually much lighter in Fluvanna County than it is in Goochland.
Well, in Goochland also, they pay 80% of education also.
Because of the jail?
Well, because of the composite index.
Of the LCM.
Yeah. So they pay approximately 80%.
The same with, Charlottesville and Buckeye, not in Altamont. Charlottesville, I think the tax burden is something like $2,500. For the median homeowner, who's in Fluvanna, is $1,500. All the while, it's $2,000. But, again, they're going to have a comparable tax rate to ours. But still, the hand of government is much, much heavier than all the while it is in Fluvanna. So, again, useful numbers. That's actually quite short to compile those numbers.
They asked an assistant county administrator for
that. No, really?
That was so fortunate.
Okay, the next second highest revenue, of course, is our public service corporation tax. We have two components to that, real estate and personal property. And this is one that we really don't get good numbers on until September. So we really just have to use last year's numbers. We don't have any numbers until September. Using last year's numbers is where we're starting from, with the 495 for real estate and the 990 for personal property. Mr. Sherrod and I got together last week and decided that we needed to add that 97%, in other words, lowering that value 3% to the 480. And I don't know if I can explain that very well. So
I'll just speak to it very briefly. Because we just reassessed and our values were lowered, they came now much closer to what actual sales are. In fact, sales may be just a touch higher than the new assessments that just went into effect. I checked with, after Ms. Orlek and I spoke today, I checked with Mr. Hickey just to get a good gauge of that. When we did it in 07 and then in 05 and 02 when we reassessed, the sales were just going through the roof almost monthly. They were up 2 or 3%. That's not the case. We think it's conservative not to assume we'll be at 100% the assessment to the actual sales. We might be a touch lower, so therefore, you know, utilities only, once the Department of Taxation sets that percentage, which they let us know the last week of April, just a couple of weeks after when it would do you any good, they're going to tell us that ratio. It had been 130 last year, you know, that's 125 a little bit the year before. We think it may be under 100. It traditionally has been for reassessment. So if we set 100%, it may be a little optimistic. I'd rather tell you 97 and it be 99 than to tell you it's 100 and it turned out to be 96.
So this is the figure you came up with?
It's actually a figure that Mr. Hickey thinks is accurate. And
so you concur with that?
I do, because we've already looked at the sales that we had in Fluvanna for just January of this year, and they were actually a few percent higher than the assessment that we have. We think it's better to be conservative, but unfortunately,
we always get it before.
Yes, sir. Again, it's September when we are told, and Ms. Orlacher knows, public utilities have actually declined for 2 years. That's they generally have gone up, say, 3 out of 5. I think we are due for public utilities' total value of the real estate piece to go up. Don't want to guess at that because we just, again, we think it will go up. A big impact on that total value may well be, Mr. Weaver probably knows it best, the increase in the transmission line that they are running across the west end of the county. Virginia Dominion is, you know, taking one of the big transmission lines and adding another two lines on it, I think, Don. But it's about a 30-40% increase in their transmission capability. Huge power lines. And in doing that, I don't know if the Corporation Commission is going to include that additional value, which will be a lot of additional value, this year, or whether they wait till it's actually completed, because it's still under construction.
The second power lines is going through the county going all back to Waynesburg.
Right. It's allowing them to push more power. It's a big trend. But those kinds of things. It's also impacted by, for example, the number of cellular towers that we might put up in the county during the previous year. So I think the number's going to go up, but Ms. Orlek and I feel like it's better to be conservative and to give good news in September this
September. So the effect of adding that 97% assessment to sales ratio in there was that when we first put together the budget, well, we didn't include that, and then after meeting with Mr. Sheridan, we decided that was a more conservative way to go. So that lowered, in the 14 budget, our forecast by $117,000, and I think that we can make that up in delinquent taxes, but I'll show you that in a second. The penny calculation, 1 cent calculation, comes out to $275,000 approximately. And that includes both real property and public utilities. For every cent that you raise the tax rate, you get about $275,000. And that is assuming 100% collection rate. Now, I have to add this because when you created the 13 budget, you assumed you had to make assumptions that you were going to keep the tax rate and the values the same. That was all you really knew at that point when you created that. So if we add a 79 cent rate, for instance, because that is not revenue neutral, with our values dropping and even with our going up, we would actually, in the June collection, which actually impacts FY13, it would cause a decrease in the real property of about $408,000 over what we originally budgeted. And in public service, there would be an increase, of course, because we are keeping their values the same and increasing the rate. So it's almost a wash, but we do have to remember when we change the tax rate for 14, it's going to impact that first collection in calendar year 13, which is still fiscal year 13. Personal property tax, again, we're using last year's number. Mr. Sheridan's office is working very hard on that number right now, and they believe around March 1st we'll have a final number. But using last year's number for taxable personal property at the $4.15 rate, taking away what the state gives us in property tax relief, that, and then using a 90% collection rate, we would budget $4.3 million in the FY14 budget. And this is the personal property tax rate comparison. Again, nobody else is where we are at in the budget process, so the only proposed rate we know right now is Fluvanna's, of course.
Since you changed the rate from 385 to 415, there's been a 5% drop in the collection rate, which is that normal when you convert to real estate property, and there's been a wash. It's been the same. 98,
and the next one, which is what I thought you were going to ask about, was the nickel calculation, and that is a nickel on personal property is about $94,000. And we brought up delinquent taxes a couple times earlier in the conversation. So what this slide is showing is what we actually collected in delinquent taxes in real estate and personal property. And as you see in real estate, it's running over $500,000, and we're already at $470,000 in FY13, and the FY13 budget is $400,000. And we initially put in $400,000 in the FY14 budget, and I believe we can increase that to about $517,000 to compensate for what we project to be a decrease in the public service corporation taxes. Personal property seems to be running right around $300,000, and well, maybe a little above. It's budgeted both in 12 and 13 at $300,000. We might be able to push that up a little bit to...
Did you build up $700,000 into the budget as revenue on delinquent?
Correct. It's built in. Yes. So...
This slide is the basis for that. Yeah. But can we maybe just a little bit above that? This would be great. As long as it's not doubled.
I'd rather be conservative and low than high. But we've always done that in the budgets, right? If you have something left over at the end of the year, great.
Rather than go the other way. Okay.
throw the daggers over here when anybody's got any money left over there.
Yeah, so.
Mr. Weaver just wants us to be perfect, right? Not over, not under.
Underestimate.
It's always good to be.
And here's what you were talking about, Mr. Ellenbrook, in terms of collection rates. And what we did here is just go back and look at the tax rates and then look at what we put in our budget as our collection rate. And Mrs. Lenher and I just talked about this yesterday. She said that earlier in the past, we found that maybe it was set a little too high. A little optimistic at 97-98%. So that, I believe, is why the personal property collection came down as much as it has. And that's something we can continue to track.
Are those actual collection rates, though? Through fiscal year 12, or are they what we put in the budget?
These are what we put in the budget. This is what we budgeted.
So what we need to add to this slide is the actuals next to it, just so we can see the actual historical trends and what the actuals were. Because that's a different look, and that's what we need to give us more about, is the actuals.
Now, that's what I was talking about last week, but is there's a drastic change.
That's why I just asked a lot. This is huge. We're a big difference.
I'm sure. We're back to 07.
But if you run all the way down, the difference is 95, 97, 98, 95. So let's say 96 average. But this is what we put in the budget. It's not the actual.
Oh, okay.
I thought
that was the actual.
No. We need to put one more column next to it. It shows the actual collection rates. And remember, the collection rates could be based on 12. Well, I don't know how far you go back and look at the tax in 3 years or 7 years or whatever.
Five on personal.
It's a roll in 5 years. Some years it may get more, some years less, but it's rolling. We need that column next to
you. Mr. Ratchett, I'm looking for the actual revenue.
Yeah, you want the actual.
I want the actual revenue. That's what I was getting at last week. I know that we went from 385 to 450.
Well, look at the master spreadsheet. It won't. Yeah, you're right. Well,
That's fine. I was thinking we were putting in actuals rather than budgeted numbers.
Yeah, those are budgeted numbers. And I will work with Mrs. Lenher, but it may be hard to get an actual collection for a year, because you look at it as over time.
Right. So just whatever the dollars were collected during that fiscal year, not necessarily what year is it attributed to, because just the dollars are collected. And
Okay, we're now on to the Commonwealth of Virginia revenue. This isn't all the revenue we get from the state, but this is the four major pieces, and of course with the largest being the PPTRA. And that is a constant number. That has been the same since 2006, and we anticipate that number to stay the same. Compensation Board, we've budgeted almost $1.7 million. CSA support, $1.4 million. And Social Services,
$573,000. Is that CSA?
Yes, it does. I mean, their ratio of state to local actually stays pretty much the same throughout the year. Yes.
But in our case, it's not so much that we get consistent money in, so we have inconsistent what we need buying.
Yes.
If you're out of it, you buy it less year's budget, you can increase that quite a bit. And Jeff is that. Well, I think so.
Yeah.
sales tax history. I was hoping this could be one of our bright spots, but because FY12 was actually historically our highest year of sales tax collection, but FY13 isn't coming in so well right now, and we still have some time to go, of course, but I don't think I can push the budget much further than $1.2 million on that. Yeah.
That's what you can't afford the parking is to pay the property.
Yeah.
That would be as much as the paper tomorrow. I'm supporting the open land golf
course. Okay, that's the end of the revenue part of this presentation, and we'll get you some more detail that you asked about. Eric's taking good notes, and we'll get you more detail in another work session. Briefly, my part of expenditures that I want to talk about is the debt service. This is our total debt, as in the total amount outstanding. As you see, at the end of 2013, it'll be almost $99 million. This is debt service. 2013, you see we had a break because of the savings that we've talked about all year. 2014, go back to about $7.4 million. It's going to stay that way for several years, unfortunately. And it takes us quite a while until we get below the $7 million mark.
And where's that money going to come from? To get back up to a little over $7 million in 2014. I mean, I'm jumping.
That debt service is built into the 2014 budget.
That comes from some of the debts from the fund balance, per se.
No, it's all currently supported with operating.
79 cents.
Yes. Okay. And this breaks out the debt service by county projects, school projects, and so the total, not counting any utility debt service, in FY14 will be $7.2 million, and the tax rate required to cover the debt service is 26 cents. Not when I say non-enterprise debt, I mean not sewer or water debt. Right.
I think that's really significant. 26 cents.
I think you're right, Mr. Weaver. I mean, I think there's not much we can do about it, but it's important to consider that is true.
It is what it is, and we can't change it.
We can't change
it. But it's about one-third of the
tax rate.
And now for a few minutes we're going to talk about fund balance, and I don't know, Mr. Weaver, I know you want a lot of detail on this, and this is a starting point, but what I wanted to show you was in FY12 revenues, expenditures, we ended up with about $800,000 excess revenues over expenditures before we made transfers. Transfers are primarily to the CIP because the way we do things in keep everything in our fund balance in the general fund until we spend it, and then we move it over to cover the CIP. So really, we ended up going, our entire total fund balance went down about $600,000. So we started with a total fund balance of 20.8 and ended with 20.2 at the end of FY12.
But we really, in the fund balance, have something like 8.2, and the rest of that is
committed. And I'll show you that in a second. Yes.
It's just the framework for the end of fiscal year 12, where the dollars are. It doesn't say what stack in the green, yellow, and red stack, or the red, yellow, green stack.
she'll get to that, but this is just showing the point at the end of fiscal year, joint.
And this is...
And so that figure has indeed has in the past been confusing to people who say we've got $20 million in the contract.
You'll see,
but they don't know that a certain percentage of our lobbyhead is already...
Right, and almost half of it, because you really ended FY12 with $10.3 million of unassigned. Right. And Mr. Weaver, this is what we anticipate, so these are just, you know... so we a board action in May gave the schools $400,000 of fund balance. A board action in November gave the schools $300,000. If we were to adopt the CIP the way it is now and the way it is funded for FY14, it would use up $2.3 million. But we anticipate the debt service savings this year of $2.1 million. So the projected ending balance of the unassigned only would be $9.4 million. And by our policy, we like to keep $7.2 million always there. So an excess of about $2.2 million.
So hypothetically, if we didn't fund the CIP at all, we have a fund balance.
Correct. Right. And that's when we get into looking at the CIP and deciding how to fund it.
Where is the $4.5 million that we had in for
$7.4 for
D911?
It's in the yellow blocks. This is my favorite slide because this is the way I
and he makes me show it every time, so.
she's a comptroller and she doesn't like this. Greater version of I like to this is the 7.3 million. This is the fund balance plan. Greater 7.2. This is what's on the side you could actually do something with. This is things that are committed for whatever else it was, whether it's the CIP project, the E911 project, whatever. That's at the end of last fiscal year. Projection for the end of this fiscal year, June 30th, is this step. 7.2 would require to be kept. That's our local policy. That would leave 2.2 on the side and these things in projects. So it's to me much simpler. Red, you can't touch. Green, you can do something with. And yellow, well, on the side is the financial term. she's hard over about that.
Well, maybe you can't touch it. Why use it for?
Yeah, but I like to. I give it above it. It's above the minimum, but it tells you how much.
Right. Red means you can't touch it. Green means you can do something with. Yellow means sorry.
Yeah.
I like that.
He's the boss.
Yellow means.
Yeah.
And
green means
we
ought to
spend all their money in that.
We're going to put it in the bank.
And honestly, the yellow means that it potentially could be available because you don't necessarily have to spend it on that thing if it hasn't already been obligated because it hasn't been spent yet. If it was spent already, it wouldn't be there. This is an obligated or committed money.
Yeah, I think so.
So if you decide to de-obligate a project, or if, for instance, this project happens to last over time, that money then drops back down into the grid.
And then that's absolutely correct. If you...
It's a lot.
Yes. But then someone will find a way to spend it.
I mean, on a tangent, the new EMS status, the 911 project, what is the status on that?
The radio part of it, you know, going to
the narrowband,
is largely done, although there's still a lot of tweaks and there's still a few radios to fill in. And it'll come in close to the original dollar value, about $300,000, maybe just over that. But it's within that 7.4. The rest of it, they're getting ready to hopefully drop the RFP and get posted in, but we're still wrangling with our attorneys. To make sure we can do it that way, thinking about an existing contract for those kinds of services.
Okay.
So we're ready to go almost any time. Just have to clear this last hurdle.
And the FCC is still happy with the narrowband?
Indeed. Well, we're clear with that.
Okay. And nothing on the horizon for narrowband?
The emergency services coordinator is going to answer that next Wednesday. He's going to do it by Monday.
Okay, excellent. Great.
Yeah, exactly.
not my favorite slide.
Yes, it is, and we will get you some more numbers on actuals and actual collection rates for a further work session. Well, that's the thing. It didn't. That's what I was showing the, that others.
Last meeting, you said it's very small, which I realize it's very small, but I would like to know what that figure was.
Well, we started out, but that's we started out with an excess of about 800,000, but because of transfers or money basically spent in the CIP, it actually went down about 600,000.
What was left over at the end of the fiscal year? Period.
There wasn't.
Was not spent.
Well, 800,000
was unspent.
Okay, that's 800,000, but
by the departments.
By all the accounts, but by because. That was used to pay for other things that you had requested. $800,000 left out of the original budget, but then you said we want to spend some more money on other things, so that $800,000 got applied to those things.
So in essence, we have another $800,000 that's sort of absorbed into this, because that budget was $800,000 shy.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, but then we, after that, then we sent the money over to the CIP.
But just to say that budget that year was, had $800,000 in there. It wasn't needed for those items listed in that budget. But to use them.
So you're saying that if we set the budget at exactly
yes.
that.
We had $800,000 left over and not used it on other items.
We'd have to look at that at the comparison of where our budget is to actuals for 12.
What the 800,000 was comprised of?
It sounds like an awful lot.
Well, it does sound like a lot, even on a $65 million budget. Yes. But remember,
with what?
Not that reason. I mean, what do the auditors
say? Oh yeah. Well, 350,000 of it we know was the CSA money that she didn't spend.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Remember, you appropriated additional $250,000
yeah.
and that went back.
Where's my catheter? Oh, it's in the mouth.
Farmer Cox, you know, they always had a figure. And I wasn't able to figure it out. I looked in the book and I just got more confused.
Yeah.
Because we've had as many as 900,000 and I've used that figure before. That's over. The end of the
I'm almost not sure how we do. Unless revenues were vastly underestimated. I'm not sure if that was dollars under the budget. That was excess revenue. We'll call it see, but that sounds like underestimation of revenue. It's really that they've too much on revenue. We'll walk this again.
Well, I don't know. Maybe that budget was $67 million. He spent $66 million. He had $1 million left out.
Most of the savings was in was in CSA and social services. Money that they hadn't. That was.
But the $800,000 left over is not federal money, it's state money.
No, no.
It's $800,000 in local money. So you're not applying the $800,000 to $65 million or $67 million. You're applying the $800,000 just to the local portion of it, which means it's much higher.
There was the economic development money left over, but then and we can go into that. I can show you where to look in the book for that.
Just like
the
advanced
package.
Oh, so
yeah, the advanced package.
Okay, well, that's all the roads we have to do for the library.
We have to thank you.
Okay. That takes care of our presentations. Is there any other commission business? Seeing none. Is there any new business to put forward for the work session? Seeing none, we want to enter a closed meeting on personnel matters and legal matters. Mr. Weaver.
Mr. Chairman.
Not for a work session. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, I move to the Superintendent County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to Section 2.2-3711A.1, Section 2.2-3711A.6, Section 2.2-3711A.7 of Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, investment funds, and legal matters.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's actually, we're supposed to have three.
He said three.
Personnel, investment, legal matters?
Right. It's section, I think it's subsection 2 is personnel.
I gave three.
2 is personnel, 6 is
section 2.2 is investment fund.
We would mark 1, 6, and 7.
1, 6, and 7.
That's what's marked on the sheet.
We have a motion made by Mr. Weaver, our second. Second by Mr. Ullenbrock. All in favor? Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. We will enter closed session. It's been wild plans plan all.